Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Go loud.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins. A Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And coming up on today's show, we haven't done one on our own for a while, so we are going to go with memorable meals. Gareth's idea, we threw it together earlier on today. We sort of
months ago.
What am I saying? Yeah, months ago.
Well, we've had whiteboards vision boards.
It's on the back of Gaz. Billy Big Balls was, I tell you what, man, I must get a snifter at your expense account on the marker, because I definitely am working off a different model in my work. So Billy Big Balls went to the Ritz, and I'm sure it's gonna pop up in his. But later on, we're going to be talking about some of the most memorable meals that we've had, and we'll share that with you. We'll have our cookbook corner and culinary conundrums, as always. We love that bit. Don't go anywhere.
So this week, I've no hesitation. I'm wondering who Cookbook Corner is, because I remembered Gary keeps calling me out. So Gary, it's your time this week for Cookbook Corner. What have you got?
Yeah, I'm going to go with one that I'm trying to think how many years ago I got this right, but it's Pit Q and Co. You probably
it's
bought
the barbecue
it
yourself.
It's the art of the barbecue
book.
I don't know. Did it start out as a food truck in England, and then it became a bricks and mortar, and then a bit of a retail thingy?
I think it came in those type of restaurants have been kicking around in the States for years, but I think they were on the start of all of these.
They were one of the first in this part of the world, of the UK, to kind of embrace briskets,
the smoke,
proper smoking, proper barbecuing, basically. Mm. And the Pit Q cookbook really, really was amazing. You know what I mean? Great. You know, there's drinks in there. There's lots of different little burnt end mash, like little ideas like that there, which is really, really cool. I think Oliver Dunn used to do that in one of his restaurants as well. I remember having lunch. I don't know, was it Bon Appetit? I had lunch or dinner one of the nights, and you got the little burnt end mash. And I've done that at time to time on a Sunday lunch in Viewmount and in the K Club, various restaurants as well. It's gorgeous. Just another. And the first time I would have seen that was in the Pit Q cookbook. They had a couple of cracking wee cocktails in there, like little, you know, Americanas, like, or what's that famous old fashioned, the whiskey ones, like different little versions of that there. Obviously, the pulled pork, the famous pulled pork that everybody at some stage gives a wee rattle at that there, different ketchups
difficult
and sauces.
Thing to do. Difficult thing to do.
Yeah,
well,
you know, barbecuing, as you and I know, Gareth, like, you know, I've got a Kamado and a few different types of barbecues. You have the same, I think, or eggs. It's it really is a skill set. Like it's not most people turn on a barbecue gas, or even if it's charcoal and they're grilling, a lot of the time you're only grilling really, but real true barbecuing is an art. And you know, trying to master getting your lines right and all the juice right in a brisket, for example.
Be careful here, you'll see a tear running down my face as the summer is coming to an end.
That's no reason to stop barbecuing.
No, but you know, you can't barbecue as consistent as you do at the moment. I mean, literally every piece of protein that I've cooked for the last 3 or 4 months has been out in the back garden.
So. Yeah, I have to say, man, Annette's been using HelloFresh like for the last while, and just been cooking the dinners, and it's been brilliant actually. Like, just because I'm at work so many evenings and I'm not around, and there was just too much food waste, and she started like, this isn't an ad for HelloFresh, but I have to say, if you've never tried it, it's amazing.
Is it?
And it's absolutely unbelievable, and it's a set amount of money.
You mean it isn't an ad yet?
And what's that?
It isn't an ad yet.
No, it isn't an ad yet. No, but I'm telling you, man, I would have been really skeptical. It's absolutely brilliant. It lands on a Thursday. Nettie changes the meals every week, and she cooks them. They're little coloured tutorials. if you haven't tried it, I'll tell you, I've no problem giving them a leg up because the food is absolutely top class. It's all fresh. You cook it yourself. But let's measure it out. It's A, B, C, 3-4 steps. So the downside to that, though, is I'm usually kind of would rustle something in the morning before going to work, or after work at night, I'd help Nanny out and make stuff or do it for ourselves. But I just haven't been doing an awful lot of cooking because she's been cooking all the time and she's been loving using that. So the barbecue hasn't had much work in my patio this summer at all. But look, now that I'm saying that out loud, I'm like, geez, I really got to get at it. I think the last time I was, a few weeks ago, we were recording here and I was chatting about a Bardi broth. I went back that night and I made it, man. That's like, you always make too much. But I was like, I was on a mission every night for two or three nights, even the fourth, I took a chance and I was scooping it out, man.
Getting better as the days were going on, I'm sure.
Celery, carrots, spuds and barley soup mix. And you know what? I've just talked myself into another one. I'm going to make another. I'm picking my mammy up today in Dublin and she's coming home with me for the weekend because our nanny's off the EP. So she's down to watch the wee dudes. I might even get mammy to make it for me then she's sweet. Here. Yeah. So there you go. That's it. Pit Q and Co. Bright orange cookbook. Unmissable. Really stands out on the shelf as well. And yeah, to get yourself inspired for winter barbecue, and why not? Okay, so it is the body of the show. We have no interview today, but we every now and again we always go solo, and or not solo, but the two of us just go down memory lane or come up with a topic. And I love this one. You thought about this one earlier. Most memorable meals. You can kick it off, Gaz. What pops out to you?
Where it was born from was we said it already, and I was over in the Ritz. Couple of Sundays ago there with a joint friend of ours. It was his 50th birthday. And we surprised.
Who's that?
Graham Neville.
No way.
So it was Graham.
50?
Yeah.
Wow.
In case anyone ever wanted to know what age Graham was. There you go. No, but it was a surprise lunch. So he was going over there with his, who you also know, Olivier. And Olivier organised for the two of them to go over. But what Graham didn't know, he also asked a few other people to go. So it was myself and Mick from Chapter One, who's been on, Mark Moriarty, who's been on, and Garrett Lynch from Stafford Lynch. So we were all at the airport, and Graham rolled out, and we were sitting at the bar in at the Marquette there. And I seen him looking across and like putting his glasses down onto his nose and going, "What's going on here?" And he came over, he's like, "Where are you going?" And we're like, "We're going with you, man. We're going." So anyway,
lovely.
We flew over to London and we checked into the hotel and we went up to the Ritz. And it's probably a place, I've been in it before. I think I had a drink in the bar before. I definitely walked in and had a look at the afternoon tea. I've never had afternoon tea, but I'm definitely going to go back and do it now after last Sunday or a couple of Sundays ago. But when we sat down and we started having lunch, someone said, "Oh, what was your favourite meal?" And we went around the table and I gave my favourite meal. And like I was with another couple of chefs and restaurateurs. So there was some serious restaurants being mentioned. But because I was there in the Ritz, and I think it'd be remiss of me not to talk about it, like, it was an excellent meal.
Yeah.
I mean,
the place just sets the standard.
It's almost like it's like stepping back in time. Like, it's this really huge dining room with not that many tables in it. I mean, there's tables in it, but there's so much space.
It really
is
a homage to classical French cookery.
It's like going into the 1920s or something.
Yeah.
Like, the grooming of all the waiting staff is so pristine. The linen is pristine. The cutlery, I mean, I've sent you loads of photographs. That's another thing chefs do when we...
I used to run into it all the time and go to the Jacks. There's a house that you could hit with a stone. I used to do a lot of private work in a house just literally down the street. So I'd often be in the Ritz,
that's
funny
beautiful.
Enough, yeah.
But it was kind of a masterclass in old, modern cookery, but done in a very old-fashioned way. And like, there's a lot of table work goes on. So we had that one of our signature dishes is called duck a la presse. So
I saw the press in your pictures. Yeah,
they bring one trolley and it had the ducks on it, and they take the breasts off the ducks, and then the carcass goes into this big tube that has a wheel on the top of it, and as the waiter spins the wheel, it presses the carcasses, which pushes
the juice
into a little thing. It's not just the blood, it's the juice as well. And then there was another table that was wheeled over to us where there was a waitress that was, she was making the sauce, so she made this peppercorn sauce. So she flambéed some brandy with shallots, and loads of skill and technique and
labour.
Loads of labour, but it was like, it was a really memorable thing. And I remember like as the day went, we went for a few points then, of course, afterwards, which when you think of, we sat there and ate this, I don't know how many courses there was. There must have been.
And you made me ask, and how many beans was it like? How expensive?
I could never, ever say what we spent, but it was very, very expensive.
Yeah.
And it was expensive because of the menu we chose, the wine we were drinking.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, how much is lunch? I know you boys, I know it would have been a lot of wine dipping going on, but, like, surely there's a set price on the lunch.
Yeah, like, I think the lunch, I actually don't know, right, because Olivier sorted it, and then we gave a deposit, and then we gave a budget for it. We gave a budget for the wine, which we blew. So, anyway, I think... you're going to get me in a lot of trouble if I say how much that lunch was.
Denise is listening.
No. The lunch, I'd say it was like £250 maybe.
Ah, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, but that's for the food.
I know.
And then the wine came in after that. So it's fair, like, extremely expensive.
Yeah.
But like, it's nearly a once in a lifetime type of a thing. And look, it's like whatever world you work in. Like, it's me really going to, if you're mad into sport, it's like going to watch the Premier League. It's the best of the best. And it really felt that way. One of the guys that was at the table with us, Mick from Chapter One, one of the chefs in the kitchen used to work for Mick. So they were taking very, very, very good care of us. So it was later on that we went in to the Devonshire. Have you been there?
Yeah,
for
the Devonshire, yeah.
Sells the most amount of Guinness in the UK.
Oshin's place. Yeah.
Amazing pub, right?
We've got to get Oshin on here, by the way. Oshin Rogers,
Let's do it. Let's get
him
on.
Was he there?
I didn't see him, but my eyes were working as good as the rare one before lunch, so we were having the crack by then. But we spoke about it coming home the next day. Like, it was a very, I'll never forget that lunch that day with those people. And for me, that's what food is.
Oh, them days are...
They're amazing,
you know. Like, we had one recently with Garrod up in the old post to all
exactly.
of us.
Exactly, and like, if whatever it is, like, I mean, Ed, I'll always remember that... the way your face went when you told the story of your grandmother boiling an egg, serving you the bread, lashing on the butter. And that's why I'm a chef. That's why I love cooking. That's why
The food we've spoke about here, Ed's was the mic dropper, wasn't it?
Big time. Because as soon as you start speaking about it, your whole face changed.
We were hooked. That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, you did your everything. Like, you just literally went into
I left the room, I think.
But you were there. And look, that's when people now, I've spoken to a couple of people since then, chef friends of mine, and I was like, here, you need to get over to the Ritz. You need to do it. Like, I've been talking about doing it for years. I've done it. It's definitely going to be a food memory that will stick with me. It was very, very, very high level of cooking. Amazing ingredients. Another dish that we had was their signature dish. It's a poached langoustine, which are Dublin Bay prawns. They were the biggest prawns I've ever seen in my career. I've never seen them this big. They were like, 120, 130 grams. Gary, they were huge. And there was a claw, piece of claw meat. I've never seen anybody even doing a claw.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the piece of claw meat. So it was nearly like a little lobster.
Many lobsters.
Three of these langoustines. And then the waiter came out with the sauce, dressed it. And it was like, there was a really beautiful glass of Chardonnay served with it. Like, it was proper, high end, very, very cool cooking. So I think that was and like, the lads were all talking about, like, that was one of the questions. So for as long as I did, or maybe triple the time, they were talking about a restaurant that they ate in, and someone picked, you know, Mick again from Chapter One. He has eaten in every restaurant.
Yeah,
gone to man.
Mick spends every penny of his name. I'd say.
I mean, literally, his restaurants that I've heard about, that I've read about, Mick is like, oh yeah, I was there, had that dish. He's like an encyclopedia. Filled him in. You know, we've all met him. So, and you know, Graham has done all right, and Mark Moriarty was with us. Has eaten in some really cool places as well, as has Olivier and Sam McCarr. So, look, it was a very memorable lunch, and it's something that I'll remember for a long time. And I'm going to pick a different. I'll talk about another one in a minute.
Yeah,
but,
well, yeah.
Where have you got, Gary? Where are you?
Yeah, well, the first one for me would have to be a lunch that I had, and again, it really came into my mind when you started chatting about the prices there, because it was only 55 quid a head. It was in the Four Seasons in Lisbon. We had been at the Food and Wine Awards in Dublin on the Frankie Malin from Amport Moore in Westport, a best friend of mine, good friend of yours too.
Frankie Fish
Love came it. With
he's
me.
He's like Kaiser Soze. His name gets dropped in, this mythical Frankie Fish.
Yeah.
It's like Goodfellas.
Frankie's a great guy. And I always remember this trip. We had just been to the Four Seasons. I'd won my first Food and Wine Award. Frankie won one as well on the Sunday. Stayed in the Four Seasons in Dublin. Ended up having the crack in the Monday morning with a load of chefs. Ended up being late for the flight. We were the last two on, doors and all closed. Thought we weren't going to get on. And anyway, we made it over there on the Monday. This was on the Wednesday. I even remember the day. And we'd kind of had two fairly decent nights eating out and whatever. Wouldn't say party. And we'd go out early and go home early. But on the Wednesday, we were floating around. And if you've ever been to the Four Seasons in Lisbon, it was one of the best. They have a little booklet. They have one of the best art collections in the world. Like, it's they have a whole trail. You can walk around the hotel. It's absolutely spectacular. And anyway, we were there thinking, look, let's take a look. We went over to the main restaurant and they said, look, there's a buffet lunch. A buffet lunch in here, whatever. Anyway, took a wee look at the buffet and it was like, you know, duck a l'orange. There was lobster. It was real Ritz classicist Michelin level. I was like, Jesus man, here looks good. But anyway, boy just says, you might want to just pop up to the room, boys, because we were in shorts and flip flops or whatever, but we had to gear up, jackets on, whole nine yards, scurried up, threw on a jacket, came down and flung it off the minute we got inside. But anyway, we sat down, man, and like right away I had a bottle of champagne. Frankie was on we had a few cocktails, a few espresso martinis, I remember, just to get a wee bit of a buzz going. And then I hopped up. I remember coming down with some duck a l'orange and an asparagus soup. And like, when was the last time you saw anybody making an asparagus soup, right? So everything was just so pristine. The buffet layout, and there was nobody really there. It was a handful of people. It was quite quiet.
But the real question is, was there bullion in that?
Yeah. 100,000%. I have been terrorized about this.
So.
Everybody says Gareth's full of shite, by the way. But anyway, and
that's still a come on
that,
now.
That day, right? Me and Frankie sat there and we got a course and we took down a bit. We were 3 or 4 hours there. It ended up being well over €1,000 for the lunch. The food was literally 110 quid, but we dropped well.
Now you know why he's called Frankie the Fish.
Well north of $1,000 on lunch. And like you and the Ritz or whatever, like we had one of the best days. I know Frankie since February 5th, 2009. I remember that's the first day. I was in Graham Neville's at the time, Restaurant 41. It was my first ever lunch with Eurotux. And it was the 5th of February, 2009. And he opened on Port Moore a few months later. And I was in the second last seat in the restaurant. And then there was an empty seat. Frankie walked in, last man in. Now that I know him well, no shock now. Comes straggling in, sits down. Best friends ever since. And we've motorbikes like you do, Gaz. We hop around the country, not as much now since I went to the K Club, but he's great company going here. But we sat down that day, man, and it was really about the food. You know, there was so many different dishes that from the early part, he cooked in Switzerland for a lot of years. He cooked in Paris for a long time. We're all classically French trained. Bruno was the sous chef, was a French guy in the restaurant, because we ended up getting into the kitchen. And the Four Seasons, it's an older building, so it's one of the McModern hotels, as you know, Gareth. There's very small kitchens, most space goes to bedrooms. But we were in the chef's office the day before as well, so they knew we were there. And the French team had just checked in. United signed Martial that Monday. I was chatting to him before going into the restaurant. They were playing Portugal. There's loads of little things that put you to chat about food memories or whatever, but like, you know, Schneiderlin was there, Deschamps, or chatting all of them outside. And just that day was one of the most special days that I've ever had. But the food then, like, there was a creme brulee I had, there was a few profiteroles as well that we dabbled at. And you know, when they cleared away the buffet, they said, look, the dessert's going to be there for like another 45 minutes or an hour. There's no rush, no panic. You know, we were spending anyway. They were setting up for dinner around us. Nobody paid any heed to us. And we just had one of the best days of our lives. We've both talked about it. I've written about it in the Indo over the years or different places as well. It was just one of the most standout meals of my life, and in good company, it was a cracker. So your second one then, Gaz?
And I'm not going to say the one that I said at lunch because it'll sound like I've notions, but the other one was, it's kind of a time where I ate a couple of meals, and it was when we got married. We got married in, you know this, but I got married in Siena over in Tuscany. And the first part of it was we flew into Pisa.
And, Pisa's lovely.
Yeah, it was cool. We went and my brother was with me and his wife and me and Denise. And before we were heading down, because we were getting there a couple of days before our guests, we got married in a villa where all of our guests came, and we ate over the couple of days. But we went in and we had a Florentina steak, and we ordered two of them, me and my brother, not knowing they're a 1 kilo T-bone.
Oh, you've told this story.
And we were... No, we all that's on them is like they're grilled with a little bit of olive oil, loads of black pepper, and they serve a big cheek of lemon on the sides. And then we had a really, really good bottle of red wine with it. So, and that was kind of this, it kind of set the tone for the next few days. Then we went down to the villa. We had, when the guests arrived on the, we done a welcome barbecue, I think we done on the first night. And, you know, we got a certain amount of alcohol for the 3 days of the wedding, and sure, when all the Irish arrived, to 80 people arrived.
They were buying on the second day.
Exactly, nearly drank all the alcohol for the front. And then I always remember the guy that was like the head of catering or whatever, was like, he was mind blown by the amount of beer that people were drinking. But there was roasting, you know, and everyone was like, off for the crack. And then the day of the wedding, we had our starter out on the... There was like a terrace, so the first course was out there, and there was a guy like slicing ham, and then we had like a seafood buffet, and then we went in and sat down, and we had, I think, four or five courses.
You always do a pasta course, don't they?
Exactly,
as well?
Yeah. We actually done a gnocchi course. There was a gnocchi with pesto, and I remember looking around, and some of our guests were going, what is all...
Where are the spuds? Where are
exactly. And then we had a fish course, and then we had the main course, but it was important... To me, and you know, Denise as well, it was a big part of it. I wanted food to be a big part of our wedding, you know. So, and then sure, then there was a band, and there was they don't really in that part of Italy, a band isn't a big thing on the wedding day. So, we had to get this band to come down from, I think they come down from Milan. These traveled down, and the speeches went on a bit longer. These lads were getting going, and then we had, you know, a big knees up or whatever. And the day after, we had another bit of a barbecue thing. But then on our honeymoon, I remember we had this lobster dish, and it was spaghettini with lobster. And any time, I'd say, like, if I was asked for my death row meal, I'd probably say that dish, because it was just such a cool time of my life, you know. Like, it was, we just got married. We were with all our family and friends over in Italy. I'd been living in Australia for 6 years. Italian food... done simply is very, very, very good.
Yeah. Me and Nettie got engaged in Rome, and right after, like, I'm obsessed with chicken piccata.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it's like asking a patty, like, for a sirloin steak or whatever, you know what I mean? But it wasn't on the menu. We went around the corner from the Trevi Fountain. There was a champagne Ferrari. I remember getting a bottle of champagne. United were playing Everton. It was the 4-4 game. We literally lost the league that day. I'm depressed. Just literally got engaged.
Well, wherever
I was, like,
I was
having
was
a nightmare. But the chicken, the chicken piccata.
Spent more time talking about the United game.
But the chicken piccata, like, I just said, oh, like, any chance just wee chicken scallopini with like a little lemon sauce? And it's like, oh, for God's sake, it's not in the menu. I was like, just be grand, they'll do it. But I'll never forget it. It was perfect. Like, when you get somebody a cookie, just a simple 2-3 ingredient dish.
And
I think
that's the thing, you know. I mean, of course, I could list out different restaurants that have been super memorable, but the whole few days were
that's and, lovely.
And that I just remember that
what year did you get married?
Well, why would you ask me that?
I don't know. Because that wasn't at your wedding, so obviously it was before we met.
I think it was 2007. It was the end 2007. I'm hitting brutal with dates, man. But yeah, it was 2007. But it was just a brilliant time. And, you know, I was just back from Australia. I was getting going, cooking again in Ireland. We had this brilliant day with all of our family and friends eating these brilliant meals. Like, we also...
Was there any of the chefs, or would you have not known the boys as well?
Paul Kelly was...
For the Mary. I was going to say, or Cooney not go, no?
No, he stayed back because... Me and Paul and
there was too many, many boys off.
There was too many cooks already away. And no, there wasn't a huge amount. Like, I mean, you know, as you get a bit older, you get more chef friends as time goes on. And I was quite young when I got married. I was 27 or 28 or whatever. But it was just a brilliant few days. And then we spent, you know, before we actually headed off on our honeymoon, we were at, I don't know whether you've ever been to Siena, but it's a brilliant city.
Been to Pisa, is it close to it then or not really?
Not really. Well, it's not too far away from it, but in the centre of Siena, they have a square like most of the cities. Yeah. And there's a very famous horse race that goes on. Yeah. They put sand in the square and they race these horses around the square bareback. No saddles, and they're like, there's thousands of people in this square, but that whole square is littered with restaurants off every street. I've been back since. I only said it to Denise recently. Like, I'm in the next summer or two, I'm going to go over. It's right in the middle of the summer, that race, because where we stayed after the wedding, or maybe it was before the wedding, we stayed in this house. It was a small house with a couple of bedrooms, and somebody's son, I'd say, maybe it was the owner's son, there was all these photographs of this guy on the wall, and he was one of these horse racing. You know, there's so much history.
Yeah.
And when you're there...
It's a great country, isn't it?
Amazing. You can feel it through the foods, and that's what the conversation we had at the Ritz, every time someone mentioned the restaurant, it very quickly didn't become about the restaurant anymore. It became about that time and place that you were, or who you are with, or... how you made you feel, or so. It would be remiss of me not to talk about that time when we got married. So
that's
Gary,
lovely.
I'm assuming you're going to tell me about your wedding meal next.
No, I cooked a lot of my own wedding meal, but it was in Viewmount. But I brought Gareth, the head chef, Neil Post. Yeah. Now that was amazing too. But no, my second one is actually, you do know people involved here, is a meal that was in my great friend Patton Ray's house in a place called Athol, a few hours west of Boston. I was staying in Boston for Christmas of 2003, and they invited me up to spend Christmas with them. So that's Samba, or Jason, as you know, Samba's mother and father-in-law. So Samba's wife, Heather, who you've
met.
Christmas
Day?
Yeah, so I spent Christmas Eve and Christmas Day with them in Pat and Ray's house. They live in Florida over the winters nowadays. Like, but back then, they were still in Athol over the winter. And Italian families, like Ray is Italian-American and Pat is Irish-American. But in Italy, which is quite similar in lots of parts of Europe, Poland, that seafood plays a real massive part in Christmas Eve. So Pat has been doing this famous in the family, like our infamous Christmas Eve seafood thing for a long time. And our relationship and friendship has been built like for almost 30 years now on the first restaurant that I opened in Boston. Samba and Heather's first house was just down the street from it. We subsequently ended up playing in the same soccer team together over there. But we met first and foremost in Devlin's, in the first restaurant I opened for Tom Devlin. And I used to do these wine dinners in the first... Well, I was a really young cook. I was 21. And we started doing wine dinners. Before there were a thing anywhere, we were doing wine dinners in Boston. It was the first Monday of every month. And I used them as a learning tool. I was young for a head chef. Tom put a lot of pressure on me. But Pat and friends, Heather, oh, they never ever missed one. Like, they were so supportive. They used to come. I used to do the Athol Orange boat race every April as well. It was like a 6 mile boat race in this mad river, and we'd stay in Pat's the night before, and she had these marinated peppers. Like, food plays a huge part in their lives, and we used to eat that. So I had huge respect for Pat as a cook, or a home cook. I mean, she's one of the best chefs I've ever come across, but she called herself a self-taught home cook, you know. So this Christmas Eve, being invited up, she was going to cook a course and I was going to cook a course, and then she'd cook a course, and I'd do one. And it was just, it just turned into one of the most memorable nights of my life, you know. And it was also the first time they introduced me to Toutière. You might have heard me talking about this French Canadian meat pie that's traditionally eaten on Christmas Eve after midnight mass, and it's called Toutière. But excuse me, the first time I ever made Toutière, Pat gave it to me. And in fact, quite embarrassing, I woke up in the middle of the night that night and somebody caught me in the kitchen heating up a slice. And I come down, I was standing on my boxers munching in, like, and you eat Toutière just with ketchup. So it's just a basic short crust pastry, right? Just lying like a little 9-inch pie tin or whatever. So you cook a mixture of pork mince and beef mince. So you render off the fat and you fry it, salt, white pepper, like celery salt, whenever you get the meat browned. Then there's a different concoction of like a little bit of cinnamon in there. What's the nutmeg, cinnamon, nutmeg, celery salt, like I said.
What binds it? Is it tomato paste?
No, you bind it with mashed potato. Oh, yeah. So you pour out the excess fat, but you keep about 3-4% of the fat. You want it to have, you don't want it to be completely dry. So you keep a little bit, maybe 5% of the fat in there. And then you make a nice floury mashed potato with no seasoning, no cream or no butter, like a dry mashed potato, and that becomes your binder. You fill your pie tin, put the pastry cap on top, join them together as you would an apple tart or a pie, and then you bake it in the oven, let it sell, and you serve it on Christmas Eve after midnight mass, just a wedge of it like you would a triangle of cake with a big dollop of Heinz ketchup, must be Heinz. And I'm telling you now, like, if you Google Gary O'Hanlon, Toutière, T-O-U-T-I-E-R-E, there's an accent grave in there somewhere too. But it is one of the most beautiful, simple, it's simple enough to make, and it's absolutely gorgeous. But that first Christmas Eve where I stayed with Pat and Ray, they were very kind to invite me up. I was on my own over there. It was quite homesick. Christmas, I always just hated being away. And normally I used to do this private gig on Christmas Day, but this one year I said no to it. Turned me back on an awful lot of money. I says, no, I'm spending it with friends. It was me, Samba, Sean, Heller, Ray, Pat, and then Terry, God rest her. She's died since. She was there at the time, and it was just, and Candace, just an unbelievable dinner. And you know, I know one of the courses I did, I make this lovely lobster bisque with scallops, and then I do like a little diced potato that I, you know, you just about cook them, you keep them wide, a little bit of bite in them and petit pois and other bits. And yeah, there was lobster, lots of different fish course. I think it might have been a John Dory and a cod dish and other things as well. It's just like loads and loads of courses, and then the Toutière that night. So forever since, and every Christmas I think of Pat and Ray, and that every Christmas Eve they come into my mind. And yeah, it was one of the most special food memories of my life. Yeah, it was magic.
Very cool. Do you have one? I don't want you to feel left out.
Is there something I feel a little under pressure.
Can't be any eggs involved.
No, I think really though, a bit more homespun yet again, but my mother's shepherd's pie. And you'd smell it coming up. So you'd get off the school bus,
yeah.
And it'd be raining, and you know the old boy wouldn't get off his hoop to pick you up. And the worst thing is you'd walk in, because we grew up in a pub, and you'd go be like dripping, and you look in, and there he is watching the racing, or there's some match on. You're going, Jesus Christ, you could have just. So you'd be absolutely, and then you just like the Bisto kids,
yeah.
Because you'd walk into the lounge of the pub, and there'd be a few boys in the corner muttering, and this is when you could smoke as well, and the stale smell of the beer on the carpet, and the old boy with the fire on, and he's watching the racing of the football, and you go, fuck this anyway, Jesus. And then you go,
oh yeah, there it is.
And you go, there, that's it. Do you know, there it is. And
Mommy saved the day.
And then you go, you drift in through the door like Casper the ghost, and you'd see her there, and you go, is it shepherd's pie? And she'd go, yes, darling, it is. And you go,
boom.
The coat come off, the bag would drop like a stone to the floor, and you get over, and you'd barely be able to see the little woman behind the steam as she put it down on the table, and you'd waft the steam out, and you'd get it almost what felt like a coal shovel, and you'd shove it in, and you'd put it on your plate. And that, for those, well, it wouldn't last long in front of me, but for those maybe 10, next 10, 15 minutes, big lump of butter beside it, and you keep topping off with the butter.
Better brown sauce,
yeah. Better brown sauce sometimes, yeah. And then she just had it right. The carrots are just a bit of
bite. No. Hold on. Pause. You're shaking your head.
No carrots in it.
Don't go there with me, mate.
Brown sauce.
You gotta have brown sauce with shepherd's pie. Don't even start me, guys.
I'm not a sauce.
Beans now. They'd have to be beans now. I don't know. Am I causing double controversy here? Yeah, there's a face on that.
No, but I can.
Beans on the. Yeah, beans.
Wouldn't shoot you down either.
This is my memory. Fucking master chefing my memories over there. Nah, not having it.
Nah. What size would a carrots cut up?
I'm afraid you're not coming back next week.
Was it Brunoir Macedonian?
Jesus Christ. Anyway. So that would be just that shepherd's pie, and
shepherd's pie does that. You know, I hope. Yeah. I don't know if he listens to the pod, but I have a chef that looks after the K Cafe, which is one of the staff restaurants in the K Club. But most Wednesdays it's shepherd's pie. But a few Wednesdays ago there was none. I said nothing. Two Wednesdays ago there was none, and then I said, "Right,
you're fired."
I don't often bring it up, but we're going to have a wee chat here now about shepherd's pie. I said. I like the way it was. I always make it my business to be here. It's important that you're seen to eat with, you know, the staff restaurants. I'm usually trying food in all the restaurants, yeah. But I think it's important for staff to see the executive chef eating in the staff canteen at least once or twice a week. And I like Wednesdays in particular because Bill makes a gorgeous shepherd's pie. But anyway, sure enough, we got back on track this Wednesday gone by, and it was in there. But I went in early, like it opens around 12 o'clock. I was about 11:45 because I was busy getting a new menu ready. So I sneaked in, took a bit of privilege. But bang on the button, 12 o'clock, I've never seen as many staff coming en masse as there was. But the excitement, I was sat quite near where they were being served. And the joy was palpable. Oh. Like everybody, it was a bad day. The rain had come in. Yeah. It was getting a bit messy outside. And to a man and woman in the staff canteen, there was just this...
It's undeniable.
Undeniable joy that they had this gorgeous shepherd's pie for lunch. And the buzz in the place after about 20 minutes was class.
Is it still something that you just make?
Now, like, again, as usual, nobody can make it.
Yeah, the same.
God rest
my mammy does.
Yeah, but the thing is, if I ate your mammy's one, I'd be like, So you go to your mate's parents' house and they make the exact same
thing. Your mates' ma's are the worst cooks you ever met.
What the fuck is this? And it's probably even nicer, technically, than your own.
For them, they're saying the same.
It doesn't have that little...
Did you have carrots and peas in it, Ed?
Carrots and peas, yeah.
Standard.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all it was. You know, quite straightforward. Whatever little magic touch he had to this day, and the, like a cloud of mash on top.
Yum.
Browned. With little brown to black on top.
Yeah.
And they're the bits you'd pick off.
Crispy Jessies.
So that would be shepherd's pie for me. But again, you know, it's interesting, as you mentioned there, when you're, none of your experiences have really, food is almost an afterthought in the greatest meals that you've had.
Mm.
All you've really described is who you're with, what you were feeling, where you were, what happened that day, meeting Deschamps or...
Yeah,
for your honeymoon, and you got the people around you, and then you might mention, "Oh, there was lobster and
blah, blah, blah."
So that is the greatest meals are not about food, really, are they? They're just about
you're right. You know,
and that's what like running, working in hospitality. It's about trying to make sure that everybody's dialed into that. You know, because I've also eaten in some very, very, very good restaurants that just felt robotic, and I've forgotten about them. Mm. You know, like even though you spent all the money, and I was like. Yeah, technically it was really great.
But that's why the service is so...
But you're having no cracker.
Yeah, but the service, again, that's why it's so important. And again, I'm coming as a complete, I suppose, no-brainer when it comes to food and all the rest. But just give a shout-out to the dining room in Castle Bar. And I went
in. Oh, Kevin, yeah.
Yeah, so good. Just my speed now.
Frankie Fish, Kevin was Frankie Fish's sous chef for years.
Really great chef.
And then he left the Anne Portmore.
It's not close to where you are.
Yeah.
And he opened, the dining room in Castle Bar. But Kevin was working for Frankie for a few years.
Yeah, it's just a small world.
And then he finished there
food was just pitch perfect for me.
He's Eurotux guy. That's Kevin Sturzak, or you might,
great set menus. And then the food is like locally sourced and, you know, the chicken's a great guy, Kevin. Really nice man. And he came out to me the first time I ate there and shook my hand because he heard I was in. But they've got great, the service there is second to none.
Yep.
And it just makes the experience.
For sure.
Because the food is so beautiful. And it's not the star of the show, though. The restaurant is. The staff are so good.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyone can get a booking in the dining room, Castle Bar, one of the best restaurants in the country. And the food is always on point. Not too pretentious, not too fancy.
Yeah,
you can
just
relax
very, very
when
good.
You're eating them.
Yeah.
Beautifully done. But the service, again, as I'm going back to my point, is that that's why the service is so important. Mm. And they just take that extra second. When you walk in, you're called by your first name because she's expecting you at 8:30. And she's
bang,
like,
you're on.
Ed, great to have you. I'm like, oh.
Here we go.
Those little touches.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think it's his wife that is front of house there. Yes. But she does an amazing job. Yeah. So again, just to speak to, it's not about the food as such. It is a part, but it's what goes around it really that makes a great meal.
Oh, that's good. Nice shout out to Kev. Yeah. Good stuff. All right. That's us. It is culinary conundrum time, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Sure, let's go straight in. No kissing.
Straight in. I knew it was going to come up at some podcast. Sorry, Orla and Athlone. But anyway, keep them coming in, guys. Not those references. But all your conundrums to food at goaloudnow.com. Hiya, boys. Love the show. What's the weirdest food combo you've ever come across that actually works? I once had a Tato crisp sandwich with peanut butter. And don't judge me, it was unreal. Slán, Orla and Athlone. That actually doesn't sound too bad.
I kind of think that makes a lot of sense, really, when you think about it.
What did she say?
Peanut butter and tato. I'd say the strangest one for me is putting laden brown sauce all over your shepherd's pie. But that's what's that about. You should see the look of disgust on Gary's face.
Try it and come back to us.
Yeah. Do you know, nothing ever surprises me with food combinations because, you know, there is things that are classic for a reason. I remember eating a starter years ago at a very large scale event and it was white chocolate and carrot. Do you remember that?
Chocolate and carrot?
But one has just popped into my head.
Yeah, and it was like, I kind of understood where the chef was going with it and all, but it didn't work. It didn't make sense. And it was just like, why? Like, why are you doing this? You know, and and if the chef listens to this, he'll probably know who it is, but it just didn't make sense.
White chocolate and carrot.
Yeah, it just didn't work. It was a starter. It could have worked if there was more balance on the plate.
A starter. There's something actually that I find utterly disgusting is when people do sorbets or ice creams with a starter. Do you know, like sometimes you'll have like a frozen horseradish sorbet with a smoked salmon or whatever. Like don't get it, man. Shock and stuff. You know, but I'll tell you who threw me for a wobbler only a few nights ago, my daughter.
Oh, go on.
So very, very rarely go to Mickey D's, right? But I think she does gymnastics to quite a high level. So there's a few nights a week, it's 3-4 hours she's in the gym. And anyway, one of the nights, pick her up and say, look, do you want a wee treat tonight? You've had been to, it was the last one of the week or whatever. And I said, look, we won't be home for half an hour. Do you want to grab a wee sneaky McDonald's or something? And she's like, yeah. Thinking she would say like McNuggets or whatever. And she goes, yeah, come on, we'll go in. I come in with you. So I was like, right, great. Because I was getting a Big Mac and I go in because I need to cook and the chips need to be straight from the fryer. I won't take them unless they burn me fingers. So anyways, I'm in there chatting to them, having the crack, waiting on it. And Cora says, right, I just want a Smarties McFlurry. And
chips.
Stop.
And I was like, all right. I goes, well, do you want to just get the chips and then we'll grab the McFlurry when we're going
together?
And she went, huh? So like one of those 11-year-old looks at you like you're absolutely brain dead stupid, right? And she goes, no, like I dipped the chips. And I was like, what are you talking about, Cora? And she goes, duh, like I dipped the chips. And I'm like going, please tell me you're not. And she goes, yeah, make sure you get salt because they need to be salty. So into the car we go. And I watched her the whole way to Granard dipping salty chips into ice cream.
Did you try?
No, she offered it to me and I told her, I told her to cop herself on.
Wow.
Don't tell me. Yeah, not sure you like it.
I've never had it.
Have you? You haven't had it?
No, well, but like, I can kind of, you understand it. Like,
I don't know. But my wee goddaughter up in Donegal did it a few years ago with a strawberry milkshake and the Four Lanterns.
Yeah.
She brought me in for a large chip and a strawberry milkshake. Proceeded to eat the chips, the full bag of chips. She dipped every one of them into a strawberry milkshake. Utterly, Julianne, if you're listening, utterly vile. And we Cora beat it the other night. Smarties McFlurry, McDonald's chips.
I have to try it.
TikTok's a lot to answer for, I'd say. So there you are.
There's a great
That's
answer
a bad combo.
For you, Orla and Athlone. Next, we're going to Louth. Laura, Hi, chefs. Loving the podcast. I keep seeing fancy salts in the shops. Himalayan, pink, smoked, flaky sea salt. Is there really any big difference or is it just marketing nonsense? Laura.
I mean, really, there's no big difference. It's all sodium. But, you know, different salts, they all taste the salt, but texturally they're different, right? And the Himalayan salt in particular is has a different texture
well,
to it.
Well, that's the daddy. Like, that's... Maldon's probably the daddy, actually.
Yeah, I like Maldon because they get larger flakes. So when they dry it out as a flakes, they get these bigger type of flakes. I find some of the sea salts on the market.
Freudian slip there.
Yeah.
Dirty seasoning.
Some of the seasonings I find are sometimes too small and too gritty. And if your chefs, for example, season a salad or something, people think there's grit in the salad and they'll be like, oh, you didn't wash the leaves or whatever. And you go, no, actually, where if you eat a piece of Maldon salt, the Oriel sea salt, the Irish Oriel sea salt is very, very good product. The smoked salts are very, very good.
Maldon
because
smoked is good too.
Yeah. And there's a
good Donegal salt there now as well, actually. Himalayan pink salt's a cracker. It's very good. But the one thing I will say about salt is you can get, I won't name any brands, like, but those really fine table salts, very iodinized and a lot. People tend to use a lot of them. Slightly more expensive, high-end Maldon or Himalayan pink salt or black lava salt is actually a pretty cool. If you're ever in Scandinavia, you'll often come across black lava salt. It's just jet black.
Can I ask this?
Really cool.
Is Himalayan pink salt, please don't laugh, is it from the Himalayas?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's from the salt marshes plains. Yeah.
So it's been there. It's been building for millions of years. And they chip away at it. Why is there a best before date on it then?
Because every food stuff on a shelf has to have a lot.
There's a lot of, I mean, there's a couple of butchers that use that Himalayan salt in their fridges because it takes the moisture out of the air.
Very good. Okay.
So we've spoken about baked potatoes and baking them on a bed of salt and because it extracts moisture with the same.
But
thing.
A little goes a long way, Ed. So if you want to bang for buck and you don't want too much sodium, I mean the body needs sodium, you need salt. Like no salt's not good for you. But obviously if you want it in moderation, the best thing to do is use a higher end salt again because a little packs a bigger punch.
And lasts longer. Actually, that's kind of leads us nicely segues to Darren and Dundalk's question. All right, lads, what's one ingredient every home cook should splash out on, even if it's a bit dear?
Bouillon.
Bouillon
is this season's turnip.
Really? Gochujang.
Well,
excuse me.
Gochujang paste. So we were chatting, was it this episode or a previous episode? We talked about miso.
Yeah.
Gochujang is basically, if you've ever had Korean fried chicken, the Asian supermarket, they have a brilliant delivery service, or if people that live in Dublin can just pop into the store, buy the little, it's the little red
tub. You get
it
in the supermarkets now.
Yeah, supermarkets are probably, nearly every supermarket now has little aisles dedicated to ethnic stuff, but if you want to have something that lasts a long time, either Frank's, Buffalo sauce, which is amazing for wings or chicken tempura or whatever you're doing, or a sandwich, really, really cool, or a dressing, a buttermilk dressing for something. But gochujang is a cool ingredient.
Gochujang.
Gochujang.
Okay.
Yeah. Starts with a G.
Yeah, it's very, very good care. I would say if someone often asks me, where should I spend money? I'm going to give two things. One is good quality butter. I don't think... You will see your money when you buy Irish butter. It's incredible product.
It's crazy expensive at the moment.
It is expensive, but it's worth it. It's somewhere, if you were saying to me, if somewhere I'm going to spend your money. And then the other area that I would say is worth spending a little bit more money is in good cold pressed olive oil, because you just can't get it from anything else, you know, and they're only used sparingly in salads and dressings and to finish off if you've just grilled a steak, drizzling it in a little bit of good, very good olive oil. So I would spend a little bit more than maybe some on olive oil we use in work, but even at home, I like buying good quality ingredients is important.
Great.
And really, from a chef's point of view, buying less of something is what you're at. Eat a little bit less of something that's better. That's really the key to eating well, I think. So, if something is really cheap, just stand back from that for a second, have a think about it, because normally it's probably not being grown correctly, or it's been grown or overproduced or whatever. So
it'll come out the taste as well, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Great stuff, Darren, and thanks to everyone who sent in their conundrums. Keep them coming, please. food@goaloutnow.com.
Okay, so another episode in the can, and we hope we didn't bore you too much by speaking shop. But really, I think the essence of today's podcast is around making sure that when you're going out to dine, surround yourself with the people that you love, and you know, really take it in and trying to create those food memories. That's what it's all about. As always, if you're liking what you're hearing, make sure you share it with your friends. Give us an L, follow on whatever platform you listen to. It really helps us grow, and we are delighted with the growth. Reach out to any one of the three of us across our social platforms. I think, you know, you'll find our social pages fairly handy, or send Ed Chef an email. And thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to chatting to you again next week.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.